Hi, Jack.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
It's Mark Snyder at PNP Network.
Hey, man, what's on?
Chuck Negrin's with us from Three Dog Night, and I got the book this morning, and I've been reading it. I'm actually halfway through it.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Good read.
It's a really good book.
Oh, good, good.
It's called The Three Dog Nightmare for all you folks listening. It's the story about Chuck Negron and Three Dog Night and his experiences with the world of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And boy, oh boy. What a ride you had, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was pretty, the 60s were a real exciting and, volatile time, and throw drugs into the mix and you've got a real problem,
Hmm.
And some people just don't get to walk away, and I was one of them, and had a 26-year drug habit, so it really took a great deal of my life.
And I look through the thing, and I see folks like Joe Shirmy, who you guys tossed out of the band because of drugs.
Yeah.
I look at the story here about Danny Whitten, who you watched die.
Yeah.
And you still, you went through all this stuff. You went through the divorce and all that kind of stuff, and you were really not only overdosing on drugs, but as you wrote in the book, overdosing on sex as well.
Yeah. Well, every night at the end of the show was just so exciting. All of, the people, and inevitably you'd end up with a beautiful girl, and then I was looking for that every night too. It was like a validation or something, but it was just really it was an amazing time.
Here you were, and sometimes you would actually get a suite, so you'd have a couple bedrooms, so you'd be able to kind of maneuver the girls back and forth.
Yeah, it was amazing. I found out that that I could kindly continue. I could continue if it was a new girl. It was a different person. So, God, I don't even know how I did it. I'm in a lot of different levels physically, or, just as a human being. It was it was something else.
Halfway through this book, we're talking about the book Three Dog Nightmare, which is from Renaissance Books. And halfway through the book, you had worked up your tool so much that you actually exploded it.
Yes.
I've never heard of that one before. That's unbelievable.
Well, see, most people don't read the warranty.
I don't think it comes with it. That's the problem.
And, after a certain amount of uses, damage happens.
That scene, I can just picture it with that young lady. All of a sudden, there's blood everywhere. She thought it was her, and it was actually you.
Oh, gosh, the poor woman was.
Oh, my.
Young girl, she was petrified. And I said, "Don't worry, it's me." She said, "I know, it's you. What is it? Well, what's going on?"
Yeah, I get this. The first thing that probably came into her mind is that you get some kind of weird disease she's now got.
Oh, she was. But back then, there wasn't anything really going on, so, she wasn't. She was, God knows, I really don't know what was going through her head, but, she got out of there.
Let's talk a little bit about the beginning, Chuck. First of all, where'd you grow up, and how'd you get into music?
Oh, I grew up in the Bronx, and New York was a very exciting time musically. We had some great, great radio. We had great black radio, which most of the country didn't have then, and we had Alan Freed. And so rock and roll was just exploding, and this new music, and I fell in love with it. And on every street corner, not every street corner, but you could always find guys harmonizing, singing doo-wop. And as a young man, I sang with the older guys, and by the time I was like 13 or 14, we had a had our own band and sang and then made some records. So I was making records at a very young age, and I just fell in love with this was how it made me feel singing. I mean, it came so naturally to me, and it was just something that was just really special, something I did well, and I just, you know, I loved how it made me feel.
Mm. Now, Three Dog Night was kind of a unique group in that it had three lead singers. It didn't just have one.
Yeah.
You were one of those three, and that's, of course, the harmonies and stuff are one of the things that sold that group.
Oh, yeah, we had a great, great, powerful sound when the three of us sang harmony. It was just very, 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 very special, and it's really what made the band unique above even having the three lead singers. And but it was, you know, the idea was that it could, the longevity of the band could really be indefinite with us changing, you know, changing leads. And I had the first several hits. And the band started getting a little edgy, you know, because, you know, we were all solo artists.
Right.
And then, you know, we said, don't worry, you know, they'll be looking for something. And then Corey had Mama Told Me and Never Been to Spain. And so he got real comfortable, and it took quite a while before Danny had a hit. So he was kind of nervous there for a while.
What was his first one?
Black and White.
Oh, yeah.
So he had Black and White. And that really was the only big hit he had. So, you know, those kind of things are tough in a band because, you know, you can't tell the public what to buy. So you have three strong egos, and two of the guys are doing really well, and one of the guys is kind of... Because the record company, you know, they kind of envision what's going to work for them, and they start picking it. And, you know, unfortunately for Danny, his sound wasn't the one they were looking for. So that caused some dissension in the band, and maybe even one of the reasons why, you know, he got involved in, you know, in some of the drugs as well, but I don't know, you know. But it was, you know, it was a wonderful band. I mean, I loved working with these guys. I left in 85, so it was a pretty long run, and I just really loved working with them.
How'd you guys all meet each other in terms of forming the band?
I was in Los Angeles. I was on Columbia Records, and I went to a party for Donovan. Remember Donovan?
Donovan Leach, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Mothers of Invention were there, and oh, God, there was all these celebrities, and someone introduced me to Danny Hutton. Actually, I met this girl, and she introduced me to Danny Hutton. And the next day, I ran into him again, and they, you know, he had a hit record at the time in L.A. called Roses and Rainbows. So he was really, really hot, and we became friends, and, you know, hung out together, and he asked me to do some background singing for his follow-up record, which which I did, and then I met Corey. Corey was playing the Whiskey. I'd seen Corey around. He was playing the Whiskey, which at that time was, you know, a really great gig, because the Whiskey was the hottest club in town.
Mm-hmm.
So his thing slowed down with the Whiskey. Danny couldn't get another record. He couldn't get a follow-up going, so and I was on tour, and when I came back, I heard they were looking for me, and we all sat down and got together and said, hey, listen, maybe if we pool our resources, we can get something going. And Jimmy Greenspoon, the keyboard player, he was a neighbor, and he used to pop in. He's 4 or 5 years younger than us. He used to pop in and just play the piano, and we're like, who is this guy? And Joe Shermy worked with Corey in the band that Corey had, so we flew Joe in from Phoenix, and then we went looking for a guitar player. We had a couple of guitar players, and then some of the guys knew Mike Alsop, and they contacted him, and then we found Floyd Sneed. He had just come in from Canada. He's Canadian, and he was backing up the Coasters. So we asked him if he would be interested in playing with us. And so, you know, it was kind of, was put together, just a wonderful, wonderful experience putting the band together, too, you know, and, you know, seeing something when it clicked, when all of us
How soon did it take before you had your first record out and you had a first hit? I know you, if I remember correctly, you guys were on ABC Dunhill or something, weren't you?
It was Dunhill at the first, and then they went to ABC Dunhill, but yeah, it was Dunhill. It was amazing. We put this thing together in late '67, and in very short time we went into the studio and made the album in 2 weeks. Recorded, mixed it, done, 2 weeks. And within a year that we'd had three singles out. The first one barely made, didn't make the top 100, and then the second one went into the 20, not the 20s, went into the 30s, I think. And then they released one, and it went all the way, and it broke the band open. But within a year, the band was a big band, so it was really quick. It was really quick. And then from that point on, from 68 to 75, I mean, we put out like 14 albums or 13 albums. I mean, it was a lot of work. We really did a lot of work in a short period of time.
I'm looking here at your charting. And the first one that charted in the top 30 was Try a Little Tenderness, which hit 29.
Yeah, 29, there it is,
Yeah.
29, yeah.
And then right from there, you had two big ones in a row, one in Easy to Be Hard, Eli's
Yeah,
Coming,
you know,
three
it's
in
a
a row.
shame that they only have the Billboard charts, because one was number one on Cashbox and Record World. Back then we had three charts. And Easy to Be Hard was number one on Cashbox and Record World, because back then Billboard wasn't the main chart. So it's amazing. We kind of lost some of our number ones when Billboard became the only one that kind of made it.
But even with Billboard, I mean, you had 21 top 40 hits in, 4 or 5 years, which is amazing.
It's a matter of fact, there are very few people that have done that even today. We're, I think, in the top 100 of all-time, artists. Successful. I think we're like number 13 or something like that of hits and success.
Who did most of the songwriting for you folks?
Well, actually, another thing about the band that was unique. Since I can't, we all wrote, but and on my last album I wrote like 12 songs. But with Three Dog Night, we had these strong egos, and when we started adjusting people's songs, it really was causing dissension. Guys going, "What do you mean? I spent all night on that line." So, I, coming from New York, and, New York, I mean, a lot of rock was built on songwriters. Lieber and Stoller, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Carole King, all these great, great writers. So, I went directly to the publishers, and I said, "Look, I got in my band, I need some material." And I brought a lot of material. I brought a Harry Nilsson song, one of Harry Nilsson wrote. And so a lot of our hits, the big hits, were written by other people. Actually, we found we broke Randy Newman. We did a Randy Newman tour in 1967, 68, that album came out. So,
and Easy to Be Hard came from Hair, if I remember.
Easy to Be Hard came from Hair.
Yeah.
So I was always looking for tunes, because I really believe that the difference between one singer and another singer is the song. I think a bad singer will do, not a bad singer, but a mediocre singer will do well with a great song, and a great singer won't do as well with a weak song. So
it's interesting, when I think of Three Dog Night, I always think of like one, but I always think of Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog, Joy to the World, which was number one for 6 weeks on the charts.
Yeah, and back then, 6 weeks, it's not like today, they have 10 different charts, and it's all, each chart has the same kind of music. Back then, you were fighting everybody. You were fighting Elvis, you were fighting the Beatles, you were fighting country. It didn't matter what it was on one chart. So it was really quite an accomplishment back then to get, a number one record for 6 weeks. It ended up being the record of the year, which we were very, very proud of. And just quite an unbelievable record, and today it still has a life of its own.
It sure does. We had Jimmy Greenspoon on a few years ago, and we talked about some similar things that are in your book, actually. He went through a lot of the things you did, I guess.
Jimmy did. Jimmy was one of the guys that had a real problem.
Talk about problems. You were doing $2,000 of drugs a day,
Yeah.
and I'm just wondering. I mean, obviously you're alive, which is it's wonderful, but I mean, how close to death did you come?
I came close to death so many times. It's a miracle I'm alive, and I believe that the reason I am alive is I spent a great deal of my time working with young people in the music business or just drug addicts, alcoholics in general, telling them what can happen. Because most people, when they drink or they use, they always think, well, if they had this or they had that, they'd be okay. And I tell them, I had everything. It doesn't matter. Everything isn't enough for a drug addict or an alcoholic. You need to get better. And so I spread the message, and I think it's the only reason I'm alive. But yes, I at the end I weighed 126 pounds. I'm almost 6'2". 126 pounds. I looked like a man in the last stages of AIDS, which fortunately I don't have. And my life was physically over. They didn't think I would recuperate never recuperate physically. I had emphysema. I was very, very ill. And today, through a regimen of physical activity and just, living a very, very careful life spiritually and physically, I'm in the best shape I've ever been in.
Well, you went to over 50 different rehab places, and it wasn't until you went to Cry Help in L.A. that you were helped. And I got to think that it was not just that they took you off drugs, but you had some kind of spiritual conversion at that point.
Yes. Well, they what they did was I was there almost a year. And it was a very slow process of teaching me that I really was, in a fashion, spiritually bankrupt. It's not a religious program. But for the hopeless, there must be some spiritual rebirth or, in some cases, introduction. And they really laid a foundation, for me, basically on just life skills and how not to use drugs. And some wonderful spiritual things happened to me when my body, which was, they told me I wasn't going to live 5 years. They took me to two different doctors. My emphysema was so bad, and I had hepatitis C too, which is a real killer. And they didn't think I was going to make it. And my body started healing through this peace that I found in the comfort. I had faith that I was going to get through this. And I found a God of my understanding, and just a miracle happened, in my life, in the sense that the obsession was removed. Now, the obsession and craving for drugs ran my life. It made me, lose my career, and when I say made me, it did. I mean, I take responsibility for taking the drugs in the first place, but people don't understand. Once the addiction happens, it is a disease at this time, and you have no recourse. Your right of choice is removed. Now, of course, if you get clean and then choose to use again, that's on you, which a lot of people do. That's what Strawberry's going through now. But I just found a wonderful new life, and as a peace I've never known. Just in the comfort of being so grateful for simple things, for my health returning. I mean, when you're not healthy, when you can't walk across a room without stopping and bending over, gasping for air, it's not a great way to live. And just the returning to health and the clarity of mind, where not every minute my head was going, you got to need another drink, you got to get another fix, was a gift. Was a gift, and I chose to say it was a gift from God. And my life changed, and this place was a wonderful place. I mean, these places that take you for 30 days, 28 days, I mean, God bless them for being there. But serious people with, serious addiction problems take a long time. They take therapy, they take time just for the mental process to regain sanity. So I was, like I said, there almost a year, and you don't get out of this place until you have enough money. They make you get a job. And I worked in a hospital. I couldn't get singing jobs. They wouldn't let me. So I worked in a hospital with children, abused and addicted kids. And you know, finally I made enough money to get an apartment and start a new life, and that's when they say, okay, in 2 weeks you're going to graduate. And it was wonderful. I had a new, a wonderful new life.
But when your new life started and you went on the road for the first time singing again?
Yeah.
Were, I assume the same temptations were still there.
No, that's the miracle of the whole thing. I had found a peace within me. And you know, then I went on the road and I realized that, you know, the obsession for drugs had been removed. And so I'd done that road and, you know, did not return. But then, you know, then there's the other things that I did, you know, the girls, and that was a choice I had to make. At that time I was married, I said, I'm not going to do this. I know if I go down any bad road, it's going to lead me right back to where I was. So I made up my mind that I was not, and I was going to be faithful, and I was going to, and then that became very easy, and I remained faithful. I didn't have a problem with that. And then each, you know, new obstacle, I knew if I did it once, I'd do it forever. You know, I mean, my personality. So no, they weren't there. They weren't there, and that's another gift from God.
That's great.
You know, and I got on a regimen of working out. And, you know, I'd go on the road. I'd go to gyms, and you know, so I'm kind of a health freak now. You know, from one obsession to the other.
Well, that's the way it goes. But it's better to have a healthy obsession than an unhealthy one.
Sure.
In terms of what you're doing now in performance and things, and also in terms of your original contract, record contract, how was the record company in terms of treating you fairly? I assume Three Dog Night still sells a lot of records. Are you making money off that?
Yeah, we do. Nicely. I mean, we make more money than a lot of people do, earning a living out there working hard for something we did 30 years ago. But yes, we actually own 40% of our catalog.
Mm.
And so we've negotiated a new deal on that. And but yes, well, the royalties are nice. And each couple of years, each 7 years, we renegotiate and we up the royalties, and we're at a very nice rate now. And
do you ever do your own stuff? I mean, have you put out any CDs on your own of your own material?
Oh yeah, I have. In 1995, I put out my first solo album, which is called "Am I Still in Your Heart?" And then in 1996, I put out this piece of art, this Christmas album with the full orchestra, full chorus, you know, the kids, Utah Kids Choir, the Junior Tabernacle Choir, and it was unbelievable. The best thing I've ever done. It's so gorgeous. And that's called Joy to the World. And then when the book came out, I did a soundtrack to it called, so there is a soundtrack to the book called The Long Road Back, which is songs which, you know, if you read the book, you know, you'd get the album anyway, but it's real personal since that. So, I have three solo albums out.
Where is that album? Is that...
It's on Hippo Records, which is Universal, where Three Dog Night's catalog is. And,
I was trying to find out who had it so we can get one to play, you know, but...
kidding?
No, I don't have one, and I'd like to get one.
Okay, you know, what I can do is, can I give you a number, or you want me to...
Well, if you,
you can give, you know what, do I have your address and everything here or no?
Well, hang on a minute, because we're still on the air here, so I want to...
I got you, sorry.
What I'll do is I'll put you on hold after we're done here.
Okay, fine, so we'll do that. Anyway, yeah, I'll get you the album, so I did that. Now I have a two-CD set of a live show at SMU University in Texas, Southern Methodist. So I have a lot of product that I've done in the last several years of mine.
So that's good, because we've talked to a lot of the classic rock singers, and most of them now tell us they make a lot more money from the stuff they're putting out on their own than they do on their catalog stuff.
Well, that's, you know, actually that's kind of a shame.
Well, a lot of these places.
That's a statement that they're getting screwed.
Well, exactly. You're right. I mean, we've talked to the gentleman from. Many of the major bands of the 60s and 70s, and they got screwed. And the ones in the 50s, even worse.
It is such a sad commentary that even today, years and years later, that these guys, don't have the resources to go in there and straighten out this stuff. Because there are a lot of laws on the books now. People have to get paid for their work. And there's a lot of precedents, you know, even if they were ripped off 20 years ago, you should be able to get your royalties. And it's very, very, very sad. But you have to have the resources to get the lawyers.
Yeah, a lot of the 50s groups really get screwed. Not only did they lose their royalties, they lost their names.
Lost their name. I know. My ex-wife is an attorney, and she was actually on one of the Platters cases.
Really?
Yeah, she was the attorney on one of the Platters cases, where actually the Platters won that one, where they wanted their name back, and, you know, they'd sold it to their manager, and the court said the money was not reasonable, and that these were the Platters, and they deserved to work.
Hey, Herb Reed is a good friend of this show.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really, it's horrendous. It's horrendous that even these people that are putting all these compilations together don't do the research or don't, you know, they're making so much money and they don't, you know, they don't care. You know, a very responsible, wonderful man, Dick Clark, I mean, he has a lot of these compilations. It's a shame someone doesn't let him know that, you know, this guy's not getting paid, this guy, because I bet you someone like him would do something about it.
Possibly. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, but...
So the other question I had, and it was emailed to me, two questions were emailed to me, so yeah. I'll ask them to you right now. One, do you have a website that people can get in touch with you through?
Yeah, www.negron.com, and it's a fun webpage.
So it's negron.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
And people can go on there. And can they order the merchandise from there as well?
Yeah, they can order the merchandise, they can order the book. Or as far as the book goes, you can call 800-452-5589. You can also get it on Amazon.com.
Okay, that's 1-800-452-5589. The book is called Three Dog Nightmare,
mm-hmm.
from Chuck Negron, and it's
yeah.
a Renaissance book.
How was Jimmy? I haven't seen Jimmy in a couple of years.
Jimmy's doing fine.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he had nice things to say about everybody.
That's good.
He's pretty nice. That was a while ago we did that interview. It was probably about 2-3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. His book came out. I remember I was in rehab in 91, and someone gave me his book, so that book came out a long time ago.
Yeah, actually it did, you know, come to think of it. Yeah, I think we interviewed him when it went paperback or something.
That was just a couple of years ago. That's correct, yes.
So that was pretty cool. He was a pretty good guy, as you are.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy is a brilliant guy. This man has a memory. I mean, he can tell you the name of the song, the cover of the 45, who published it, and the backside of the thing. I mean, he knows. He is an historian, quite an intelligent man, and a great, great musician.
And one of the, by the way, one of the things I thought was very interesting is the cover, the juxtaposition on the cover, folks. There's a picture of Chuck singing, and there's also a picture in the background. It looked like you being booked by the police.
Yeah. You know, you get these, publishing companies, and they want to hit you right in the face. So.
Well, they get you. They get you in the face so much, you got bandages on your nose.
Yeah. So what? They took my booking shot. Yeah, in my. My bad years, so to speak. But it's the book is a real commentary on what can happen to anybody. It's a full opportunity disease. Anyone can get it. It doesn't matter if you're a millionaire, which at the time I was. If you're black, white, green, it doesn't matter. If you overdo any substance, you know, your life will change. And some people, they can't even do them. They're predisposed, so if they drink, they're going to be alcoholics. They just can't drink at all.
Well, there's a lot of lessons to be learned, and it's a fascinating book, as I mentioned. I got it this morning, and I'm just noticing I've read already about 150 pages of it. So,
oh, great.
It goes quickly, and it's very interesting. Three Dog Nightmare, Chuck Negron. Again, you can get it at Amazon.com or call 1-800-452-5589. I'm going to say goodbye to you, but I'm going to put you on hold, and
yes,
I'll talk to you in a second, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.